Hello, I'm Shauna Dobie, and I'm the editor of Canada's Local Gardener, a print magazine put out by Pegasus Publications. And this is Flora and Fauna. A couple of years ago, I wrote an article on how to grow sweet potatoes for the magazine. It was for our Have You Ever Tried story. I'd never grown them, and I was amazed that you could in Canada, and the information I found online indicated that you could grow them in Winnipeg, no less. I found that out from a website called Winnipeg Sweet Potato, and it is run by a woman named Tiffany Grenko. I called up Tiffany and asked her if she would be on Flora and Fauna, and I found out a lot of interesting things about her and her sweet potatoes. Keep listening, because we will share all. Why don't you tell me about Winnipeg Sweet Potato? How old is it? How much do you produce in a year?
I started in about 2012, I think was my first year growing sweet potatoes. And it was sort of a curious adventure. One had started to sprout in my pantry. You know, it was probably January when it started to sprout. And I thought, what are these curious purple sprouts coming out of my sweet potato? So I started to research it. And I learned that those were much like potato eyes, were sprouting plants that were going to produce sweet potatoes.
Just a quick interruption to say the quality of the audio on our call was not high. Please bear with me. Pretend you're talking to your old auntie on the phone or reading your grandkids' essay with spelling mistakes.
So I started searching it, and the probability of them growing here wasn't looking promising. So I sort of just figured I'd experiment. It was really going to be an experiment. And I was actually quite hesitant because from what I had read, they weren't grown in Canada and they required a lot of heat units and quite a long growing season. And within that, there's lots of sweet potatoes that have different growing maturity dates. People hadn't grown sweet potatoes so much in Canada because some of them had been known to need 140 days growing time. I can see whereas the experiment hadn't spread into Canada just yet. And also the popularity of sweet potatoes have really increased in the last 30 years. When I was a youngster, they weren't really in stores. You know, they weren't available and they weren't common. People didn't really love them and make sweet potato fries and things with them. So it's not often that we get to introduce a new vegetable to our gardens. When they started growing, I figured I need to see if they will grow in my garden. And that's when I planted one of those little sprouts out in spring and tended it all along. And much to my surprise, I grew sweet potatoes that first year. So it's just sort of been a nonstop thing since then. I've been growing them since 2012.
Wow. So to your knowledge, are you one of the first people in Canada who grew them, or were there people doing it before then?
I feel like the whole sort of industry, pardon the pun, sprouted around that time. Their popularity as a food and, you know, McCain had adapted them into sweet potato fries at some point. They became available in restaurants. So people who might not have even been familiar with the sweet potato now had them as French fries. So naturally, we're going to wonder, you know, can we grow them here? So I think it was sort of a little bit of climate change. And in terms of agriculture, they were starting to look into sweet potatoes, especially in the tobacco growing regions in Ontario. The warm, temperate climates that were known to grow tobacco were not producing tobacco anymore. So they started looking towards other heat-loving crops that they could grow instead of tobacco. So I'm not sure if it was us home gardeners that started it first or if it was the industry, but everybody seemed to have gotten on sweet potatoes roughly around the same time.
Tiffany started growing sweet potatoes in 2012, and like she says, that's roughly around the time we all started eating sweet potatoes in earnest. You can see it in a graph of sweet potato imports and domestic growth. In 2011, the number really jumps for both. It may have grown in popularity owing to fad diets like South Beach and Paleo. It could be because people suddenly realized how high they are in beta-carotene, potassium, fiber, and vitamins A and C. Or it may just be that everything old is new again. During the World War II growing frenzy, people in the U.S. grew a lot of it because it was easy to grow there, and it was sweet. But then people gave up gardening when the war ended, and with it their sweet potatoes. Nobody in Canada, of course, was growing sweet potatoes during the war, but you can see how the research and popularity came from the U.S. Today, there are fewer and fewer people who were alive during the war. We feel like we've discovered the sweet potato anew. And you grow Covington.
I grow Covington.
Now, how did you start to grow Covington? Did you get them from somewhere, or is it just all from the original sweet potatoes that you grew?
When you see a sweet potato in the store, it's the most confusing vegetable in the store because it either says yam or sweet potato. And it's sort of a marketing, it's strange that one of our vegetables is so confused. What we eat in the store is a sweet potato. It's not a yam, but often the sign says yam. And when it's sent to the store, there's no information regarding what variety that is or where it's grown. And it's actually misidentified as a yam. A yam is a tuberous vegetable similar to a sweet potato, but in a completely different family and has completely different characteristics. You know, it's not at all. And it can grow into massive weights of 20, 30 pounds plus, and is a starchy, hairy, gnarly root vegetable, usually used for animal fodder. So even North Americans understanding what a sweet potato actually is compared to a yam, there's still some education required.
Yeah, as I understand it, yams are they originally from Africa?
Exactly. Yeah. And you can find yams in some international food markets. But for the most part, when you see these tuberous vegetables in the store, it's a sweet potato. So that being said, there's many varieties of sweet potatoes. Mm-hmm. And some of them have a very long maturity date. So when you pick one up in the store, it's not going to be advertised what variety you've bought. So it could be one that's grown in a very warm climate and needs 140 days. So if you sprout one from the store, you have no idea if it's going to mature in our climate, you know? So that was my first task, was figuring out which sweet potato I actually had my hands on, which one had started to sprout. So there was two that I started with. It was Beauregard. Beauregard is one of the most classic commercially produced sweet potatoes, orange fleshed. And I started Beauregard and Covington, and I found them both to be quite successful in our climate. Covington is sort of the newer sweet potato to the scene, very comparable to Beauregard, but maybe grows a little bit more consistently and more regular production. Predictable production from the Covington. So industry has moved into producing Covington, and it does have a 90 to 100 day maturity date. So that is a sweet potato that was suitable for us and produced commercially, so available as a seed crop for me to produce the sweet potato slips.
And where did you get your original Covingtons?
Well, I've brought them in from both North Carolina and California.
I don't generally propose going to the U.S. to get your slips for anything, but is it difficult to get slips from the U.S.?
I buy the seed roots. I produce the slips. The United States is the largest manufacturer of both commercially grown sweet potatoes to be consumed and the roots, the seed roots that are used for propagating new plants. And also they produce plants, but that's sort of why I got into the business, was that there was no large producer of slips in Canada up until now. So I've sort of been trying to accommodate the growers that are on this side of the border, being able to get their plants from Canada rather than from the US.
It can still be difficult to buy sweet potato slips in Canada. Tiffany sells them online at Winnipeg Sweet Potato. Heartbeat Farm and Gaia Organic Seeds in Eastern Ontario list them, and Linden Lane Farms in Kootenay, BC. There's another source in Alberta that I'll tell you about in a couple minutes. But keep your eyes peeled. They may be available at your favorite garden center this spring, or you may have to search further to get them. You said Beauregard does all right here?
Yes, Beauregard's another one of the successful, anything basically within 100 days. We have 100 days. That's pretty much our maximum. Any variety, there's over 100 varieties of sweet potatoes. And now we have different ones that are white fleshed and purple fleshed. And it's gotten really exciting in terms of variety. And some of them have also been very successful. I had a white variety grow very, very, very well for me. But honestly, they're just not my favorite to eat. So I've sort of focused on just the orange flesh ones, the traditional ones that everyone does know. And I'll try and branch out into different varieties. The Vineland Research Center in Ontario, they have developed a sweet potato called Radiance, which was developed for the commercial industry, for farmers who wanted, like I was speaking about the tobacco farms. Those farmers are looking to move into something like sweet potatoes. And the advantageous thing there is that the tobacco growers had kilns. They were already set up with kilns to dry the tobacco. So that served perfectly for curing the sweet potatoes after.
Ah, yes. It isn't enough to just grow sweet potatoes. You have to cure them. Tiffany will tell us more about this in a bit. But first, what if you don't cure them? Can you eat them straight out of the ground? The answer is yes, you can, but you shouldn't. The sugars that make them so delectable haven't yet formed when you dig them up. You'll need to keep them in a moist, warm environment first.
There is, from what I understand, a lot of sweet potato producers that are wanting to start out, but it has been hard for them to source their slips from the U.S. So it's a new industry that is growing and in many directions.
Do you have an estimate of how many slips you grow in a year to sell?
Oh, I've produced upwards of 40,000. I was about the most that I produced. And been up until this last year, it's been a one-man show. I've had the help of my family to, keep the business running. And we went through COVID and all the nurseries closed. And unfortunately, the year that I produced the most of them was the year where all the nurseries closed. And I wasn't able to sell them, to get them out to the gardeners that year.
That is such a drag because gardeners were desperately looking for everything they could get their hands on that year. But, you know, nobody was ready for it.
I know it was terrible. The shipping, everything from Canada Post was down, the supply shortages, and then the demand was up. And now we have a whole bunch of new gardeners that learned to love gardening during the pandemic. So we'll keep making sweet potatoes and try and get as many out there as possible.
You may be wondering what the heck is a slip. A sweet potato in storage can start to grow with stems and leaves coming out of the potato itself. To grow slips, you encourage this to happen. You can cut the top half of the sweet potato, the half with the growth, and put it in a glass or on a tray with water. You'll need to change the water every week or top it up. Keep it in a sunny location. When the sprouts are about 2 inches long, break them off and put the ends in water and put it in a sunny spot. You should see roots within a couple of weeks. Congratulations, you have made a slip.
I did try that Radiance. I had actually collaborated with the Assiniboine College in Brandon to do an experiment to figure out how these Radiance would grow in terms of slip production indoors, because that's sort of the different thing that I do from most of the other slip producers is I do mine indoors. Being in Winnipeg, we can never really set the date for when spring starts. That may be where I'm sort of stand out in this sweet potato propagation business is that I'm doing all of mine indoors. So with the Assiniboine College, we had developed an experiment to figure out if it was more productive or feasible to produce the slips indoors rather than outdoors, which often had the farmers waiting until the very last minute to get those slips into the ground. And if there's any sort of delay in shipping or, you know, a hold up at the border, then the farmers couldn't get their sweet potato slips in the ground. So my idea was to grow them inside early enough so that I could get them out to all of Canada in this very small window between our frost nights and, you know, the days that are starting to warm up and people want their sweet potatoes growing. So there's a very small window in spring there to get them all alive and out into the gardens.
You grow them indoors in your home or do you have a place where you grow them?
I did start my business in my house. Every year it just doubled or tripled in business or more. I eventually went and grew in the basement. I partnered with a microgreen grower and used part of his space. And then I started selling to TNT Seeds, and they needed more than I could produce in my current space. So I was able to take over a space within their building and use an indoor grow space with artificial grow lights and start the slips there. And that bumped up my production. I do it in a vertical, like on racks, so that it's a very small footprint and it's very efficient. and artificial lighting to produce as many sweet potato slips as I can in a small space.
And that's in Winnipeg?
Yes. So I've been at TNT Seeds. They've been in business for 75 years. And it's a very reputable business, and they sell a lot of, you know, seeds and plants and tubers and roots and rootstock. So it seemed like a perfect fit for me to be there and working with them. And I've been there since, I think, 2020 was unfortunately my first year there was the pandemic hit. So I had made so many sweet potato slips, and then everything shut down across the world. So a few of them hit the compost pile that year.
We're going to take a break now, just like you had in 2020. But this break won't be nearly as long, I promise. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes to hear more from Tiffany about growing sweet potatoes.
Canada's local gardener just got even better. Flora and Fauna, a new e-digest coming weekly. Go to localgardener.net to find out more information. That's localgardener.net.
The Canadian sweet potato named Radiance was reported to mature 11 to 20 days earlier than Covington in 2019. Tiffany says they take longer than Covington to come to maturity, and Farm Ontario says Radiance takes 118 to 122 days. Days for Covington vary, but most places say it takes 100 to 110 days. On the other hand, some nurseries are selling Radiance on the prairies, and the commercial producer of slips for the West, Alberta Sweet Potatoes, sells and ships to home gardeners if you have a minimum order of 25. If you don't want to grow that many, it would be easy to get some friends together to put in an order. I guess I'll try Covington next year, but mostly because I've met Tiffany and she tells me they'll work. It's a cognitive bias, but after skimming the internet and getting no definite answers, that's good enough for me. How long does Radiance take to come to maturity?
Interestingly enough, the reason I don't grow Radiance is because it does have a bit of a longer maturity. I think it's actually 120 days, 110 or 120. They sort of give a range, you know, with all of these things. That's why I didn't focus on Radiance just yet. That was sort of pushing the time limit. I figured about 100 was our maximum, you know. Heritage squash and melons, even tomatoes and corn, some of those things can take 100 days. And in my growing experience, 100 days is about as much as we can do. So it is a bit curious to me that the Radiance was developed in Canada, but does have a longer maturity date than the ones that are already growing.
Yeah, if it was grown for industry and in Southern Ontario, I think when I was in Toronto, I think I had 160 frost-free days.
Wow.
And I came here to, I think it's 106. So I'm relearning how to garden this year.
I've looked it up again. According to the Farmer's Almanac, the average frost-free days, well, the number of days between the last spring frost and the first fall frost, in Winnipeg is 116 days. In Toronto, it's 161. And Montreal is even longer at 168 days. Calgary is lower than Winnipeg at 99 days. Charlottetown in Eastern Canada is 142 days, and Vancouver is 180 days. Victoria tops Vancouver with an average of 208 frost-free days per year.
You mentioned on your website that there are some different ways you can go about making your garden more hospitable for sweet potatoes. You can put down black plastic is one way.
Yes. So sweet potatoes, the thing about them is they just love all kinds of warm. They never want to be chilled. The sweet potato root itself should never go in a refrigerator. And the plants are actually a little bit more, not that they're frost tolerant, but they're more cool tolerant than the actual tuber. If you put the tuber in your fridge and it's below 10 degrees for even just a few days, it will suffer damage. It will start to rot eventually and not be able to produce sweet potato slips from it. It'll start to deteriorate after that. So they're quite temperature sensitive themselves. Heat gets them going. And in Manitoba, like you said, we do get that hot summer. The challenge becomes in the shoulder seasons, the spring, getting that soil up to temperature is the one thing we can change. We can't actually change the weather, but we can get that soil so that it's a suitable temperature for them to start rooting. Anything that we can do to bump up that soil temperature in spring. Hopefully the weather will catch up, but that start, early start, is crucial to get them not only just hanging out in the garden, but instigated to grow is, I'd say, the number one trick to growing sweet potato slips. And then in the end, the fall is equally as important because it cools down and we lose those heat units in fall. Keeping them in the ground as long as possible is another secret because they really only start to bulk up in their roots in the last 3 weeks, really, of their maturity. That's when they're really bulking up. So if you pull them out in a panic a week or a week and a half early, you've lost all of that extra production in the end where the tuber is supposed to actually bulk up and store all of its sugars. In the beginning, you want them to start properly and then you want to leave them right until the end. So those are sort of the two tricks in Canada. In Winnipeg, the black plastic can really warm up the soil and get them excited to start. One of my first, he's a market grower. He grew sweet potatoes in one of my first years. And he had grown actually what I know of as the largest sweet potato that any of my customers, well, that's not true. Somebody did outgrow him. But anyways, he's in Manitoba and he was very impressed with his first year growing sweet potatoes commercially. He grew just, you know, maybe 200 plants and he had a very basic hoop house setting over his row of sweet potatoes. And so that could be something as simple as a row cover or a hoop house or any kind of anything that can create a microclimate and trap that warmth in early spring helps boost not only the soil temperature, but the ambient temperature. And that little greenhouse effect that he provided for the slips in the first 2 weeks got them off to the right start rather than just hanging out in the mildly warm June temperatures. Temperatures were bumped up in that microclimate to up around 21 to 28 degrees in the first days of June. The faster you can get those sweet potatoes rooting, the more of a plant they can produce. The larger the plant is, the larger the tubers can be. He was really impressed that first year he got one sweet potato that was 2.2 pounds, just one sweet potato. And we are looking for some bulk in these sweet potatoes. You can grow them here, but you want to have some actual tuber at the end of the season. And that becomes the goal, is to bump up that size. So he had one that was 2.2 pounds. Each sweet potato plant produces, you know, 8 to 12 sweet potatoes. So if you have one plant producing one singular tuber that's 2 pounds, and you've got a few other smaller ones in there, that's very productive. And that was seen as very successful for him. So he was really impressed that all it seemed to have taken was to give them that really good start, that warm start. And then his words, not mine, he woefully ignored them for the rest of the season and was very happy with the outcome.
The world's heaviest sweet potato ever was considerably larger than 2.2 pounds. It weighed 81 pounds, 9 ounces, and was grown by Manuel Perez Perez in Spain in 2004. It was an ugly thing, all gnarly and yellowy white. Most super large sweet potatoes weigh in at around 15 pounds, but that's in the southern U.S. and tropical places. Across Canada, there are no official reports of the largest sweet potatoes yet. For myself, I'll be happy to just grow any sweet potatoes next year of any size.
If you pull your sweet potatoes too early, are they just skinnier or shorter, or do they taste different?
They are skinny, very skinny. A sweet potato is actually not a genuine tuber. It's not an actual potato, which is a tuber. A sweet potato is actually just the swollen root. It starts out as just a root, and then as it generates size, you know, it bulks up and you get that what we call a tuber, but it's technically not a tuber. It's more like a carrot is a root. So a sweet potato would be more similar to a carrot in that it's a root, not a tuber. A sweet potato that wasn't so much successful for you would show you that in the form of being skinny.
And would it taste different?
Probably not. It would probably still generate the same sugar, but it would need to be cured just the same. I have found that the smaller, sort of sadder sweet potatoes that I've ended up with don't cure or store as well. a good sized sweet potato that's cured properly can actually last for over a year, which is just amazing because you don't even need a cold space to store a sweet potato. So in terms of the market growers, they love that idea of being able to store a whole room full of vegetable at room temperature. That's a great advantage for them, but you need to cure them properly so that the skin hardens and dries out enough so that they're able to just sit there for a year.
I looked up what to do with underdeveloped sweet potatoes online and was surprised to read an article on Epicurious, the foodie cooking website, about fingerling sweet potatoes. You may already know about this, but I just found out that certain gourmands favor the immature sweet because they're, and I quote, quick cooking, tender skinned, and cuter than Elmo. So if you have to dig up your sweets before they're fattened, just serve them soon after curing and glory in your gustatory prowess.
We've got to talk about curing because this is the part that scares me. I haven't really grown vegetables in the past, but I've dabbled a little bit and now I have some room to do it. So sweet potatoes are definitely on my list. But at the end of the season, how do I cure them? I don't have a greenhouse or any of that.
I didn't have any of it. And you know, when I first read about how all the reasons I could not grow sweet potatoes here, that was number two on the list. What will I do about curing? And that first year, I couldn't believe that they grew here. And then I just was completely clueless about what to do with them from that point on. To be honest, I actually ate one that was not cured and I found it to be quite sweet, but that sugar definitely does bump up in the curing process. So it's something you want to do. If you just wanted to grow a sweet potato, just one plant and just experiment with it, I wouldn't worry at all about the curing. Interestingly enough, in Winnipeg, when I'm harvesting my sweet potatoes, it's perfectly timed because when it's cold outside, that's when I need to pull the sweet potatoes out when it's too cold. They're not going to grow anymore. They're at risk of frost. They're just probably not bulking up anymore because it's cool outside. That's also when I'm putting my heat on in my house. So it's perfect timing. I harvest the sweet potatoes. I bring them inside the house. And the ideal curing conditions would be 82 degrees and 85% humidity. So those are really hard conditions to replicate, but that's where that kiln comes in in Ontario for the growers, because that's exactly what they could produce. But that is harder for the home gardener. But I brought my first ones in and I just let them sit in front of me. We have forced air heat in my house. So I put them in a basket with airflow right in front of the forced air vent. And just because it was cold outside, we had our heat on and those sweet potatoes just sat in front of that vent I put them there for 7 days. So ideally they would be experiencing 85 degree temperature. We set our house to 70, 71, but the heat that comes out of that vent is quite warm and it would actually just be just enough warmth sitting in front of that radiator. Now, if you have either an old-fashioned radiator or electric baseboards, forced air heat, any of those things that are generating heat in fall are fine enough. I found to put my sweet potatoes right in front of that vent and that keeps them toasty warm. And it seems to be just enough warmth to allow those starches to turn over to sugar, which leaves you with a sweet potato. So I couldn't do much for the humidity, but I have met a few other sweet potato growers who've gotten quite creative and put them in a laundry basket with heat blankets. It's also, those heated mats for starting seeds. It doesn't do much for the humidity, but the heat seems to be the key, the warm situation for them to turn into sugar. So the curing process is intimidating, and I certainly can't offer ideal situations. If you read up about curing, it needs all of these particular temperatures and humidity, and I do not provide those. And my sweet potatoes not only turn sweet, but can store for up to a year.
Monitoring the temperature of a small area where you're keeping your sweet potatoes for curing isn't hard. There are thermostats you can attach to heaters. Some people put their sweet potatoes in a small closet or in an unused shower stall. You can also buy a humidifier and a hygrometer control for the space. This is getting expensive, though. Certainty costs money.
I usually wash them. I know there's sort of a debate about whether to wash your carrots and potatoes, but I do wash them. I find that if they're washed, I bring them in from outside and usually my hands are cold. The sweet potatoes seem cold. They don't like cold. I don't like cold. So we have a quick little hand warm bath. I wash them off and I feel like that warm bath is just the start. Their skin is now wet and I wrap them or put them on a towel in front of the heat. They get their little spa time. So if you can't provide the ultimate heat, the right temperature, then leave them in that warm situation for longer. The warmer your temperature is, the less time it takes to cure. And the curing also toughens the skin so that even a little scab can form over a little dent that you've made with your pitchfork. So that curing process is really key, but it's not as intimidating as it sounds. You just have to try. And, you know, just if you have a radiator somewhere where there's warm, they can just hang out there. That's all they're doing is not getting cold.
I always wondered about why you can't wash your root vegetables when you harvest them, as long as you dry them after. I'm relieved to hear that Tiffany does, and I may try it next fall. Now we're going to have a break, but stick around. We'll be back in just a minute.
Find out what's growing on. Follow Canada's Local Gardener magazine on social media. Explore the colorful world of gardening with us. Discover our special offers and take part in our online contests. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Get growing with us.
Welcome back. Tiffany has more to say about growing sweet potatoes in Canada, so let's listen.
What about growing them in big pots?
Excellent. They love it. Pots, as we know, can get extremely hot. The sun beats on the side of the pot and it's above ground. One of the advantages is, like I spoke about the beginning of the season, when the geothermal temperature hasn't come up yet, pots are already warm. So when the frost and the thaw is still happening in the garden, the pots have been sitting out for weeks already with the sun heating them up. So you can get a great start in a pot, and also pots stay hot throughout the whole season. Pots you can also move into the sun. You know, you can put them in the hottest spot. I always tell people to grow their sweet potatoes in the hottest places, even that spot that's right next to your air conditioner, a big metal pot next to an air conditioner that is just nobody wants to live there. I would try a sweet potato there. If you can get water to it, that's the key. If you can provide that recipe, that magic mix of heat and enough water, then that's the secret for success for sweet potatoes. The hotter, the better. And pots always get hot.
And it's not too small to grow it in, say, 10-gallon things from Home Depot, those big pails. Is that the right size? Or is that too small?
That would be the only thing I would hesitate. That is probably enough size of soil. Maybe more difficult to keep moist if you're able to water it. The smaller the pot you use, the more you have to stay on it in terms of hydration. So if you can give it a bigger pot, then you could stay away for a day. The smaller pot might stress out halfway through the day and not have enough water. So I think that that would probably be about the minimum amount of space that I would give a sweet potato. You know, if it wants to produce 8 to 12 sweet potatoes in that soil, that might get a little tight, especially if it's really growing gangbusters. You know, if it's in a good spot and it has the nutrients and water it needs, that whole bucket may be full of sweet potatoes by the end of the day. I've seen them in Georgia where people have grown them, and granted they have the ideal climate there, but I've seen them grow them in a 70 liter Rubbermaid container, and the sweet potatoes grow like gangbusters, so much so that they have cracked through the bottom of the container and found their way into the earth below. So they definitely love pots, and anything above ground is also easier to harvest. Sweet potatoes, when you pull them out of the ground, they're actually quite tender and can snap. So having a pot that you can dump out and just find your sweet potatoes is also really easy.
To grow sweet potatoes in pots, you'll need containers at least 12 inches deep and 24 inches across. I've found 20-gallon grow bags online, and they're about that size, and they're cheaper than plastic totes if you're looking for an economic way to start. Ask Tiffany how much water they need.
Don't need a lot of water. They're kind of actually quite drought resistant in terms of just staying alive. I've left them in really hot gardens. I have lots of different gardens. So I've tried them in lots of different scenarios, lots of different microclimates. And I've put them in the hottest gardens and left them there. And they can withstand unruly temperatures, and they can even survive through drought. But if you want them to make lots of vines and have lush foliage and have all of those leaves that can be their solar panels to generate more root growth, they do need water. That may be why they are good in a drought scenario, because they're very rooty. You know, they'll root down and around and be all over the place looking for their source of water. When they're bulking up, they need water, as you can envision with the root. It's a large part water. They can be very drought tolerant, but to produce a nice big root system, they do need good water. And the one year that actually they sat in one garden that had known to be waterlogged, they surprisingly did very well. So that sort of clued me in that, yeah, they do need water. They can survive without much water, but if you want to see big tubers, they need some juice.
The website The Spruce recommends that once established, you give your sweets 1 inch of water per week and cut the watering 3 to 4 weeks before you harvest. I've always wondered how you measure how much water you're giving your plants. Well, one way is to set out a used but cleaned tuna can in the garden. When that is full, you have 1 inch of water.
What do you feed them?
They're not very demanding. They can grow in sort of any kind of soil. Like it can be sandy. They do grow well in clay even. You can get sort of maybe more of the misshapen roots and maybe not such perfect shapes in the clay soil if it's compacted. But they can grow in sandy clay soil. They do appreciate good compost, but sort of like carrots, they will actually grow in many different soils quite well. You don't want to grow them in overly rich soil. If it's really rich with manure, you would end up with more foliage, like tomato plants and peppers. You don't want to give them too much in the way of nitrogen. They would focus on growing foliage rather than the tubers. So when I'm using a fertilizer, which I don't use a lot of fertilizer, I would use something sort of like a 10, 20, 20. The phosphorus and potassium are the higher numbers, like with root crops, to instigate the root growth rather than the leaf growth. So if you were to grow them in a really rich soil that has a lot of animal manure, for example, they would be more tender. The skins could be more tender and the plants themselves would have just way more foliage than tubers. So a good, healthy compost soil, but not too rich in the nitrogen.
What kind of pests go after sweet potatoes?
Well, they're delicious. The leaves are actually edible. I know in some Asian countries, the sweet potato is more prized actually for its vines. And they're sold, they cut the slips off and they're sold as a vegetable. Sort of similar. I mean, if you cross something like asparagus and spinach together, because it's got a little stalk and then the little leaves are really tender and delicious. They're actually used. I've met a lot of people from the Philippines. One gentleman told me about his mother would go out every morning and snip the vines, the new tender growth from the sweet potato vines, bring them inside and saute them with garlic and olive oil. The leaves themselves are susceptible to anybody who wants potato leaf, and that could be grasshoppers, bunnies. But as far as insects, there's no real problem. Like in the first year, I had thought that flea beetles would eat them. But actually, they haven't turned out to be a problem. They're not in the brassica family, so they're not bothered by flea beetles all that much, which in Manitoba is a big problem for us. I have seen some wireworm issues, but for the most part, problems that plague sweet potatoes in the U.S. for commercial growers don't necessarily exist here. We don't keep our sweet potatoes year-round, and a lot of the pests that bother them in the U.S. don't survive our winters. Goes for some diseases as well. You know, that those diseases that affect sweet potatoes in the U.S. won't survive in our soil and our climate year round. So win one for us.
That's always a good one when it's too cold here for the pests. Yeah,
exactly. But that being said, deer and everybody wants to munch on those greens. So if you have them in a garden where there's any sort of hungry animals, you know, they're going to munch on the greens. And if they're munching on the greens and they take them all away, then they don't have that supply of energy to make the tubers. So sometimes some fencing is required for sort of those tender greens.
I've never tried sweet potato greens, but I will next summer. You can eat them raw or cooked, and it's recommended that you take the newest leaves since the older leaves get tough and bitter. Apparently, they go well in coconut milk soup with lemongrass, garlic, turmeric, and ginger.
Do you know if it's an annual or perennial?
Now that's a good question. I suppose it's a perennial in the right circumstances, because one of the most interesting stories I love to tell about sweet potatoes is in some countries where they experience hurricanes and devastating natural occurrences, the sweet potato has been reported to have saved entire countries in terms of starvation, because a hurricane will blow through and destroy every food crop and food stores that community has. But the sweet potatoes are still locked in underground. So the tuber stays in the ground. And even if shrapnel and, you know, it got flooded and everything happened to this sweet potato, it's so determined to grow that it would probably just, not only could they harvest that sweet potato that's in the ground and eat it, but that sweet potato has eyes that will make future slips. It's sitting in the ground, continues to make other sweet potatoes. In my experience, even the ones that end up thrown to the sidelines will still produce a tiny little sweet potato given just a little bit of soil and a little bit of water. So if they're left in the ground, yeah, my understanding is they're completely perennial. Also in the US, I'm not sure if this is so much the practice now, but used to be that they would have a row growing of sweet potatoes and they would just snip clippings of that vine and turn to the next row, which was empty, and plant those clippings. And that's the only propagating they would do. So it's like a perpetual, just from this plant into the ground. So I think in the right climate, they stay in the soil year round.
Very versatile.
Here's another interesting thing about sweet potatoes. They may indicate that pre-Columbian South Americans traveled by boat to Polynesia or the other way around. That's almost 8,000 kilometers, and it happened at least 1,000 years ago. Sweet potato in the Cook Islands has been carbon dated to the year 1000 CE or AD. The guess is that Polynesians went to Ecuador and brought it back, and from there took it to many places in the South Pacific.
You know, of course, the sweet potato vines that we see growing all over in those containers are, of course, sweet potatoes. Have you ever tried curing those roots and eating them?
Those are the ornamental sweet potatoes, and they are absolutely edible. They're not toxic or different in any way. They just don't have the sugar content that the sweet potatoes that we've cultivated, you know, that we grow for consumption. That being said, I know people who have eaten them. You know, some of the sweet potato varieties aren't as sweet as the ones that, you know, I cherish, the Covington, and the ones that are sweet, but the white and some of the purple varieties aren't as sweet. The people who have grown the ornamental ones and eaten them don't mind them. They're not looking for all that sugar. Then they're not terrible. That's just not what they're grown for. And they might not also bulk up the same way. They might be a smaller root genetically. That might be their plan, is to be a smaller root. So we don't grow them for food, you know?
Right. Yeah. They're putting everything into the foliage, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
I knew that you can eat your ornamental sweet potato vines and the roots if they aren't treated with anything weird. Here's something I didn't know, though. The seeds are hallucinogenic. Now, I'm not looking for any kind of hallucinogenic seeds myself, but if you know someone who is, you might tell them to give up. Growing seeds from sweet potatoes can be a long and fruitless journey in Canada. If your vine does flower, it may not produce seeds. Some flowers are sterile. And if not, sweet potato flowers require another variety of sweet potato flower to pollinate. Give up and buy Morning Glory seeds for your legal high. They are the same genus, Ipomea.
Tell me, how big big is your garden?
I have my yard, which I call my garden. And then I have a space out in Enola on a friend's farm. And I've had too many gardens over the last number of years. And actually, I read an excellent book called The Lean Farm. And one of the main messages there was don't spread yourself out too large and focus really on every sort of foot of space you have that's really close to you. It's more sustainable, especially with gas prices nowadays. So I'm trying to really utilize every inch of space that's right on my property. So my front yard has, well, it's getting consumed by garden. And my backyard is fully consumed and the driveway gets consumed. I grow peppers in pots on my driveway. So basically trying to take advantage of everything that's really close to me. And that means that I have less gardens, but one really busy garden at home.
Making the most out of the space you have may seem like a kind of overkill if you live in the country in Manitoba or anywhere in Canada. But if you live in a city, it is important. I've quadrupled my yard space recently, moving from central Toronto to, well, fairly central Winnipeg. Part of me is delighted with all the new space I have to grow things, but I can see how that space will run out fairly quickly. Now, I just have to say you are a pretty interesting person in addition to, in addition to the sweet potatoes, you forage for food, which you sell to restaurants or you have in the past?
Yes. I'm actually right. I'm a mushroom forager, wild mushroom, sort of what I've been specializing in.
And do you do that all inside the city or do you go out of the city?
I forage for myself in the city, but in terms of for restaurants, that happens in the forest.
Wow. You also make pemmican.
Yes, I've learned to make pemmican. I always wanted to know how to make pemmican. And I learned from a lovely elder last winter. Might have been the winter before, you know, time just flies. But yeah, I learned to make pemmican and I collected, you know, donations of foraged berries from friends that they had in their freezers and bought some bison from an excellent local farm and learned how to make pemmican and have been doing my best to honor the Indigenous culture and learn what foods they might have been missing. I was able to give some away last year. And the best part about it was that I want to feed people the pemmican. But what I was able to do and learned was that a lot of the people had actually never even had the opportunity to eat pemmican. I try and do what I can for food security in Winnipeg. And that's what's led to a lot of my volunteer work and growing vegetables for people in need. But to be able to make a food that they have lost touch with was a really special thing.
I have always wanted to try pemmican. I looked online for recipes, and it turns out that the survivalist crowd, these people who might have a bomb shelter stocked with 2 years of food in their backyards, they're big proponents of it. Of course, survivalists are proponents of pemmican because once you take all the water out of food, it can last for years and years. It's packed with calories, so it's an ingenious recipe for any nation that faces food scarcity some years. Apparently, Indigenous groups could live on nothing but pemmican for an entire winter. So you're part of the South Osborne food forest?
Yeah, I've been growing for, I think I was with them for 5 years, just helping them develop the gardens and producing food for the community and teaching the community how to grow food and innovating new ways to do that as sustainably as possible. It's called Sustainable South Osborne. And that was a lot of what we tried to do was use the resources that were abundant in the community, like wood chips and leaves and turn all of that and unused space into food. I did that for about 5 years.
Where did you learn all that stuff?
I am just a curious person. Yeah, I'm curious. Like that sweet potato started sprouting in my kitchen and I went, what are you doing? What is this? And why don't I know about this? So yeah, I'm just a curious sort. And then I'm amazed that these things, you know, like again, back to that sweet potato, that it was doing its thing with or without me. So if only I could set the stage for it to finish doing what it wanted, then, you know, we could have magic. And that's how gardening goes for me, is I just I see some sun and some soil, and I figure, wow, the possibilities are endless here. And I grew as much as I could in my own yard. And then when I learned of the community spaces, I just, you can't have everything in your yard. And, you know, so in the public space, there's opportunity for apricots and plums and black raspberries and horseradish and asparagus. And, you know, the amount of things that grow here is just outstanding.
It's been a real inspiration talking to Tiffany. She not only knows about sweet potatoes, but she has done so much else for the larger community. Readers of Canada's Local Gardener can look forward to a profile on her garden soon, and I look forward to seeing it in the summer.
Wow, you are quite an inspiration.
Oh,
I really have to thank you for doing this today, and I'm really glad that we made contact.
Me too. This is so fun. I always love to talk about sweet potatoes.
And thank you to the Government of Canada, who helped make this podcast possible with funding, and to the other people who make it possible with their technical expertise. Yasmin Conception, our digital designer, Carl Thompson, our print designer, and Ian Leet, our everything else designer. We'll see you next week.